All right, ready to dive in? Today we're tackling cognitive development. We'll be unpacking some fascinating YouTube lectures on Piaget and Erikson, two giants in the field.
And we're not just skimming the surface here. We're pulling out those key
Yeah.
moments, connecting theory to real-life situations. Think of it as a crash course in understanding how our thinking evolves.
Okay, love it. So first up, Piaget. He's all about how our thinking abilities develop, and not just in those early years, right?
His theories span from infancy all the way to adulthood.
So, like the whole enchilada.
Pretty much.
Yeah.
And at the heart of it all is Piaget's concept of schemas.
Okay, schemas. Break that down for us.
A schema is basically a mental framework we use to make sense of the world. Think of it like a mental filing cabinet.
Okay, I'm visual, so I like that analogy. Like when I see a furry, four-legged creature, my brain instantly goes to dog. That's my schema working, right?
Exactly. Just like a filing system helps us organize information, schemas help us categorize and understand our experiences. But what's fascinating is that these schemas actually change and evolve over time, which brings us to Piaget's stages of cognitive development.
Ah, yes, the stages. Sensorimotor, preoperational, concrete, and formal. SPCF. I still remember using that acronym in college to keep them straight.
This is classic for a reason.
It really is. And speaking of preoperational thinking, it reminds me of this funny thing my son did when he was little. He couldn't read yet, but every time we drove past those golden arches, no matter how far away, he'd shout, "McDonald's!" He associated those arches with something exciting, probably Happy Meals.
That's a perfect example of symbolic thinking in the preoperational stage. He was connecting a symbol, the arches, to a concept, McDonald's, even before he could fully grasp abstract thought.
And it just goes to show how much those little brains are working, constantly trying to make sense of the world around them, even if they don't have all the pieces yet.
Absolutely. And this constant effort to make sense of things is driven by two key processes, assimilation and accommodation. Remember that video example, the child who looked at a cat and called it a dog?
Oh, yeah, classic case of a schema misfire.
Right, the child was trying to fit that new information, the cat, into their existing dog schema. That's assimilation.
Trying to make it fit, even if it doesn't quite belong in that file folder.
Exactly. But then the parent corrects them, and the child has to create a whole new cat category in their mental filing cabinet. That's accommodation. Adjusting our existing schemas or creating entirely new ones to better fit new information.
So it's like our brains are always going through these mini renovations, right? Adding new files, relabeling folders, all to make better sense of the world.
Precisely. And while Piaget believed these cognitive stages are generally linked to age, he also acknowledged that life experiences can impact how this development unfolds.
Like that example from the video about the man who'd experienced a traumatic brain injury, it really highlighted how our cognitive abilities aren't always guaranteed. Our experiences can really shape how our thinking evolves.
Absolutely. It underscores the complexity of cognitive development.
So Piaget gives us this great foundation for understanding how our thinking develops, but then comes Erikson, right? He takes us beyond just the mechanics of thought and into those really relatable psychosocial crises we face throughout life.
Yeah, and unlike Piaget, who really focused on childhood and adolescence, Erikson's theory covers the entire human lifespan.
The whole shebang.
The whole shebang. He proposed eight distinct stages of psychosocial development, each with its own challenge that needs resolution for us to really grow.
It's like climbing a ladder, right? You have to get through one stage to move to the next.
Exactly. Each one builds on the last. And for anyone familiar with Freud, you'll see some interesting parallels, especially in those early stages. Erikson's trust versus mistrust, autonomy versus shame and doubt, and initiative versus guilt, they all kind of echo Freud's psychosexual stages.
Oh, yeah, I see it. But Erikson puts more emphasis on social and cultural influences, right?
Exactly.
It's so interesting how those early experiences, like, were our needs met as babies, or were we allowed to explore as toddlers? Those things can have such a lasting impact on who we become, how we see ourselves, and how we build relationships.
It's really incredible. And then as we move into those later childhood years, we hit the industry versus inferiority stage. This one's all about developing competence.
Oh man, tell me about it. I was hopeless in gym class, always picked last. I was sure I was the least athletic kid in existence. But give me a book. Academics were my thing. I love that feeling of understanding difficult concepts.
Then that's exactly what Erikson was getting at. It's not about being good at everything. It's about finding something that makes you feel capable,
Right.
successful.
Right. You got to have your thing, right?
Yes, that feeling of industry, of being good at something, it's essential, especially in those early years, for building self-esteem, for believing in ourselves.
Totally. Makes you wonder, though, what if someone had just handed me a physics textbook back in gym class instead of a basketball? Who knows, right?
Right. But speaking of finding your niche, let's talk about generativity. This is one of Erickson's most interesting ideas, I think. This stage usually pops up midlife, and it's all about looking beyond your own needs.
That urge to give back, to leave a mark on the world.
Yes. It's not about just getting by. It's about contributing something meaningful, whether it's through being a parent or mentoring or art or even activism.
Leaving something for the next generation.
Exactly. Generativity is about making sure that your life has a lasting impact. And this is making me think about that example from the video, the divorced dad who basically checks out on his kids to focus on his new life.
Oh, that one was rough. Talk about a missed opportunity for generativity.
It really highlights how easily that stage can get overshadowed by self-centeredness, you know, by just feeling stuck.
Yeah, totally.
But when people get through this stage successfully, generativity can be so fulfilling. It gives you this sense of purpose, this connection to something bigger than yourself.
Definitely.
And then, of course, eventually we reach that final stage, integrity versus despair. This is where, as we get older, we're faced with those big existential questions. Did I stay true to myself? Did my life have meaning?
Did I make a difference? Those are big questions.
But they are. It's about looking back on life, not with regret, but with acceptance. You know, did I embrace opportunities? Did I build strong relationships? Did I leave the world a little better? These are the kinds of reflections that can either lead to peace, to feeling fulfilled, or to a lot of regret.
So we've got Piaga. He gives us the blueprint for how our thinking evolves, right? And then we've got Erickson. He's our guide through all the emotional twists and turns of life, those eight stages. But how do these two theories, these two different lenses on human development, how do they actually like fit together?
That's where it gets really interesting. Piaget focuses on the how, the cognitive processes, you know, the nuts and bolts of how we learn and understand things. But Erickson, he's focused on the what. He's all about the content of our inner world, those social and emotional challenges we face at each stage.
So Piaget gives us the tools, those mental filing cabinets, and Erickson's telling us what to put in them, what matters most when as we move through life.
Exactly. And here's another connection for you. Both Piaget and Erickson were influenced by, you guessed it, Sigmund Freud.
It all comes back to Freud.
Well, in a way, Piaget, his early work was at the Binet Institute, and that place was steeped in psychoanalytic thinking. So he was definitely exposed to Freud's ideas.
Interesting.
And of course, we already talked about those parallels between Erickson's early stages and Freud's psychosexual stages.
It's like, it's all connected, right? This whole conversation has really given me a new appreciation for just how complex human development is. It's like we're all on this lifelong quest to figure ourselves out, always evolving, changing how we see the world.
And that constant growth, that change, that's what makes this whole area of study so fascinating. There's always something more to learn, new research coming out all the time.
We're all works in progress, right?
Yeah.
Constantly reshaping how we make sense of the world, which actually makes me wonder, where would we as adults, you know, where would we fall on Piaget's stages right now? Are we still assimilating new information, or are we having to like do some major accommodation as we're navigating, well, just being adults?
It is a great question.
I know, right?
And it really highlights how these theories, they aren't just abstract ideas stuck in textbooks. They actually offer a lot of insight into our own lives, our thought patterns, the way we interact with the world.
Absolutely. So to everyone listening, here's a little something to think about. Think about a recent experience you had, something that forced you to confront new information, maybe see the world in a new way. Did you try to make that information fit with what you already believed, you know, assimilation? Or did you have to adjust your thinking, accommodate that new information to understand it? Something to ponder, right? And on that note, we'll let you all continue on your own journeys of cognitive development.